You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to get into what has been going on with the unconstitutional, frightening deportation of Abrego Garcia, as well as the actions of the Trump administration to date, which is by any good faith characterization, defying the spirit of our Constitution and the spirit of both the Supreme Court's and a district court's orders in this case. It can only be explained that way. But before we get there, I just wanted to give a little love and acknowledgement to some incredible texters that we are hearing from for the first hour of the show. And I hope you all noted that there was a through line. We began by talking to Gray Gunderson, my colleague at WXCO out of Park Falls, about changes to Oneida County's comprehensive plan to make it easier for timber companies to clear cut, especially, you know, might be a little profit motive since we're not going to be getting as much timber from Canada. And does that make sense or does it not? Do we know what the environmental consequences of those things might be? Who is in the best place to assess those? How much influence did the timber companies have over the Oneida County Planning Commission's vote? All those kinds of things. We moved from there to talking about the lead crisis that is occurring in Milwaukee public schools, but more broadly across the state. Any building built before 1978 likely has lead paint in it. How are we going to deal with that? Are our children safe? Well, one of the things that we would do is engage in wide-scale testing of our students, sampling in buildings, engage in remediation, but we'd use that data to try to triage our approach. Well, the city of Milwaukee asking the CDC for help analyzing that data. CDC saying, nope, sorry, everybody's been shut down and our funding's been cut off. You know, that's not going to work anymore. And that wasn't just for lead poisoning. It was for a huge swath of things that are necessary to help local health departments, whether we're talking about cancer clusters, toxic substances spilled, et cetera, et cetera. All of that obviously relates together. And one of the things that it points to is, how do we know and should we believe what government officials are telling us? And I'm going to sort of skip to the punchline here. And I'm going to tell you not what my opinion is, but I'm going to tell you what my experience has been working with the Walker administration in the governor's office, working with the Evers administration in the governor's office, working for two different city of Milwaukee mayors, interacting with two different city of Milwaukee mayors, interacting with two different Milwaukee County executives, and various legislative bodies over those periods of time. I can tell you this, I'm constraining my comment only to the officials that I have personally worked for and with and seen them in closed door meetings. I have never known an elected official, a chief executive elected official in the city of Milwaukee or Milwaukee County, or the leaders of their legislative bodies, to engage in material and persistent lies to bolster their personal political power. I have also never known Governor Tony Evers to do that. Now, is there spin because it's... Yes, of course there is. But I mean a government official or actor intentionally withholding data that is the public's, covering up data, manipulating data, lying about data, lying about basic facts. I've never seen that from any of the officials I just met. Not all of them always agreed with one another. I have seen that from Scott Walker, and I believe we're witnessing it every single day from the Trump administration. So whether or not we're talking about public health, which we did for the first hour of the show, or whether we're talking about our individual right to due process, the Supreme Court has failed to grapple with the reality that the Trump administration deserves no truth-telling presumption. And in fact, everything that anybody says from the highest level of the Trump administration should be met with high suspicion. In fact, perhaps an a priori assumption that they're lying about it, because that's what's happening. I simply have never seen that ever before. I also never saw it from the federal judge that I worked for that was a twice appointed Reagan appointee to the federal court bench. Never saw him lie or shy away from the actual facts. And if the Supreme Court of the United States can't deal with that reality, what do we do as regular people to confront the reality that nothing that Donald Trump or anyone says from his administration is due even a de minimis amount of our belief? What we do is we ask to see the receipts. We take it upon ourselves to investigate, to not take what they're saying at face value. We're going to do a little bit of that on this show today. I'm going to continue to do that. Folks, you may have heard through the grapevine that this fine program is moving to the drive time slot starting next Wednesday, April 23rd. From 4 to 6 p.m. is when you're going to hear me. Once we make that move, every Friday, I'm going to have a new segment called The Worst Whopper, and I ain't talking sandwiches here. I'm going to be talking about the worst lie that has recently come to my attention or that you bring to my attention from the Trump administration or from Republicans in Congress or from Republicans in the Senate or from Republicans or Democrats anywhere in government. Because the thing that we need more now than we ever have are government officials that tell us the truth, no matter how personally costly. If it tanks their political career, so freaking be it. But right now, we need fearless truth-telling, because all of it's getting lumped up in the, well, my guy says this, and well, my guy says this, or my gal says this. It cannot be true at the same time that either Abrego Garcia is or is not a member of a violent gang. It cannot be true that a court adjudicated him to be a violent gang member and someone says a court has never made that finding. So what's actually going on here? Either the administration is engaging in one of the most despicable and deceitful violations of due process and doubling down on it by operating in what can only be called bad faith and tongue-in-cheek technical compliance. Oh, well, we're facilitating it. Why are you facilitating it? Prove that you're facilitating it. Well, we tell you we're facilitating it. We use the word facilitate all the time. See, we're facilitating because we say we're facilitating Mr. Garcia's return to the United States. But none of it's actually happening. Want to take a call, and then we're going to listen to what El Salvador's president had to say yesterday in the Oval Office, and then what our fine attorney general had to say about Mr. Garcia. Tim from Whitewater, you're up next, sir. What do you have to say?
Well, I had a question on the whole lead thing.
Go ahead, sir.
I believe that there was a bunch of money, federal money, put into doing that. My question is, has that been started? I understand wanting to do, you know, crunch the numbers and all that, but, you know, let's get started taking out the oldest pipe in the oldest buildings, and don't use the testing as an excuse to cover for not getting it done and avoid lawsuits.
Yeah, Tim, I hear you. Like, two things. One, we need to talk and separate out funding and the CDC's function as data analysts and to help public health departments respond to these sorts of crises. The second thing is, what federal monies have been earmarked specifically for capital improvements in our public schools, and do they prioritize lead abatement? And those are two different questions. I do not know if any federal programs that are specifically targeted at public school lead abatement. I don't know what's going on with those dollars, but Jamie and I are both taking a note right now so that we can get back to you on that, Tim. But let me return to Mr. Garcia's case. Thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate the call and the question. And yeah, listen, what sort of lead abatement, how and why, and where's the funding coming from, and is it working? All of those are right on questions. Thank you for listening, and thank you for the call. Let's take a listen to what the president of El Salvador said in the Oval Office here. And I want you to be listening for what he's not saying. Go ahead, Cal.
How can I return him to the United States? Like, I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it. It's like, I mean, the question is preposterous. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
But you can release him inside El Salvador.
Yeah, but I'm not releasing. I mean, we're not very fond of releasing terrorists into our country. I mean, we just turned the murder capital of the world into the safest country of the Western Hemisphere, and you want us to go back into the releasing criminals so we can go back to being the murder capital of the world? No, that's not going to happen.
Wow. And let's listen. This is Pam Bondi and the dead man walking vampire, Stephen Miller, who's the architect of Trump's deportation policies. This is them yesterday also answering some questions about this.
First and foremost, he was illegally in our country. He had been illegally in our country. And in 2019, two courts, an immigration court and an appellate immigration court, ruled that he was a member of MS-13 and he was illegally in our country. Right now, it was additional paperwork had needed to be done. That's up to El Salvador if they want to return him. That's not up to us. The Supreme Court ruled, President, that if, as El Salvador wants to return him, this is international matters, foreign affairs, if they wanted to return him, we would facilitate it, meaning provide a plane.
Anybody else catch what wasn't being said there? It's the 8,000-pound gorilla in the corner. I'm going to point out the most important thing that wasn't said in either of those clips when we come back, because that is the root of the issue here. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here. Our great discussion continues. Your two cents also welcome.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's cold.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. So to bring you up to speed, this half hour, I am talking about the current status of Abrego Garcia's deportation case. This was a man who was mistakenly removed from the United States, disappeared in the middle of the night, stuck on a plane, sent to a prison that a federal judge has found, quote, highly likely, where a prisoner in this facility in El Salvador is, quote, highly likely to face immediate and intentional life-threatening harm at the hands of state actors. That's what they described that prison as. He was never supposed to be there. An immigration judge had said, had found Mr. Garcia to be credible, had found that he would face imminent threat of death if he were returned to his country of origin. Unbelievable. Right now, there is a hearing going on before the federal judge in Maryland that's hearing this case, the federal government appearing there. But yesterday, what can be described only as a stunt in the Oval Office, where the El Salvadorian president just, oh, well, I'm not going to take a terrorist back. Well, how can we possibly do that? I'm not going to smuggle him into the United States. We're not going to do that. No. Followed by more drivel and nonsense from Pam Bondi. Now, the drivel and nonsense from Pam Bondi, let's listen one more time, Cal, because what she says here is is a lie. Let's listen.
He was illegally in our country. He
That's
had been
true.
Illegally in our country. And in 2019, two courts, an immigration court and an appellate immigration court, ruled that he was a member of MS-13 and he was illegally in our country.
That's a
right
lie.
Now,
let's just wrap this up. That's a lie. A court never reached the mixed law and fact question that he is a gang member. That was never an adjudicated fact by any court in this country. Pam Bondi knows that. She is lying. Let me tell you what is actually true. The allegations of Mr. Garcia's gang membership relate back to two documents that stemmed from his earlier immigration proceeding, one which eventually resulted in him being found to be credible and permitted to remain in this country. In other words, not supposed to be deported. The two documents was a federal form that it describes why someone should be deported. And that form effectively referenced that he is a gang member, relying on what is called a gang field interview sheet from the Prince George's Police Department. Okay? That GFIS report from the Prince George's Police Department, okay, was not filed prior to Mr. Garcia becoming being arrested and detained by the Prince George's Police Department. Oh, no, 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 no. That statement wasn't taken before his arrest back in 2019. No, no, no. That statement, that alleged GFIS report claiming based on an anonymous confidential informant who just said that he was a member of this gang, that was filed with the Prince George's Police Department 4 hours after they arrested Mr. Garcia at a Home Depot where he was looking for work. Okay? That is it. In the course of his initial immigration proceedings, a court did not release Mr. Garcia from custody because the immigration court is required to take the government's factual assertions as if they are true. So when the government submits a piece of paper that relies on an anonymous confidential informant who has never been subject to cross-examination, who no one knows who they are, and there is no other evidence other than that CI's allegation that this guy's a gang member with no other facts or evidence, the court has to take that on face value as if it was true. And so he was not released on the basis of that GFIS report. That's court number one that Pam Bondi is claiming conclusively determined based on an evaluation of evidence that he was a gang member. That's a lie. It never happened. By the way, that form filled out by a police officer based on a confidential informant is double hearsay. The officer was never cross-examined, nor was the confidential informant. It's all hearsay. It has never been cross-examined. None of it. There isn't other evidence about this. And when that detention decision, while his immigration case played out, right, like in any criminal matter, they decide, are you going to be released pending trial or not? It's kind of how it works in immigration. Were they going to release him pending his full hearing? No, because they had to take the government's assertions as if they were true. The appeals court didn't disrupt that. That's court two. But that bit of evidence was never subject to any cross-examination. Those statements, the people that made them, never cross-examined. There has never been a court that has adjudicated and concluded that he is affirmatively a member of a gang. That is a lie. And it's not just a lie. It is a damn lie because it is completely distorting the entire discussion that is occurring right now. And it is a damn lie because courts should be able to rely as well as us. We should be able to rely on the fact that Pam Bondi isn't going to lie to us. That she would say to the American public, have the audacity, the fearlessness to tell us the only thing we ever had was an unnamed confidential informant. That's upon whose word we have sent this man possibly to his death. And that was in violation of the ultimate immigration court's decision that he was not deportable, that there was a real reason for him to fear for his life. By the way, there's a ton of detail about what those threats to his family were. He was effectively, and his family were having their lives threatened for shakedown money from a different gang. That they are willing to distort and lie about this tells you the weakness of their argument. Because the thing that was missing from the El Salvadorian president's statements in the Oval Office, the thing that's missing when Pam Bondi talks about this is, yes, the president of the United States acknowledged that an immigration court said that he should not be deported. And accordingly, because we've made a mistake, President Trump asked the president of El Salvador to return Mr. Garcia as quickly as possible, and that we will arrange transfer. They've never said that. Because what they're doing is absolutely nothing, and they're doing nothing in violation of your due process rights and potentially Mr. Garcia's life, and they're lying about it. Stay tuned. We're back. Welcome back, everybody. If you wanted to get your 2 cents, nickel, dime, or quarter in on my discussion about Abrego Garcia, and you didn't get a chance to, Wisco Paul, I'm looking at you, Dana from La Crosse, Tim from Eau Claire, I apologize. We are going to pick this up tomorrow. Again, I'm going to go through and dismantle the lies being told by Stephen Miller, AG Pam Bondi, the president of El Salvador, and our president about Mr. Garcia's gang affiliation. It is a lie. It is a damn lie. There is no credible evidence that has been tested in any courtroom and then credited. It was only in preliminary proceedings where judges are basically required to give some credit to the government's assertions of gang affiliation. I'm going to go through it again tomorrow in great detail because that sort of a lie is so essential because it strikes at each one of our most fundamental rights in a democracy, and that is to due process. When the government wishes to strip us of our liberty and our property, to have our complaint, our objection to that seizure of person or property tested in a court of law to be heard, our most fundamental right, this administration has said they have no respect for, and they continue to lie to you about Mr. Garcia. And I ask you, why lie? If it is so clear, produce the evidence, show us the receipts that Mr. Garcia is a dangerous gang member. Bring him back. Give us and him his day in court so we can, again, maybe regain some trust in your factual assertions that you make every day to us. The reason you don't is that you know you're lying. I know you're lying, and each and every one of you know that they're lying. That is unacceptable, especially when it comes to these most fundamental individual rights. Jack from Merrimack, sir, thank you for your patience. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I've got a couple things to say. I'll make it as quick as possible. First, continually pushing Mr. Abrego Garcia's case to the forefront, and now the claim of his totally undocumented and unproven so-called gang membership. It's purposely continuing to incite xenophobia, and it's partially to keep attention away from things like the multi-trillion dollar welfare to the rich tax break and the disruption of helpful government agencies.
Yes.
But the lying about this, the lying is just a continuation of the lying that's been going on, and it's been bolstered by MAGA repetition since at least 2025. And there is a real purpose to that, too.
Yes.
And I'd like to remind the listeners with just a couple of quick quotes from the historian Hannah Arendt. This constant lying is not aimed at making people believe the lie, but to ensure no one believes anything anymore. Such a people derived of the power to think and judge is, without knowing and willing it, completely subjected to the rule of lies. You can do whatever you want. And the ideal subject of totalitarian rule is not the convinced Nazi. It's not the dedicated communist. It is people for whom the distinction between fact and fiction, truth and false, no longer exists.
Thanks so much, Jack. So important. The point isn't that you believe the lie. The point is that you believe nothing. That is why our obligation collectively to investigate, to inform ourselves, to demand answers is more important now than perhaps it has ever been. Wisco Paul, very briefly, because I got another great guest for everybody. What you got this afternoon, sir?
Well, the Republican Party needs to stand up, but they're not going up. The Trump followers are going to believe whatever they're told. So right now, Maggie, the Supreme Court has to stand taller because you defy them. And if you can defy the Supreme Court, you can do anything you want.
Yeah, that's the fear. That's what we're walking right up to. They're lying every day about it. They're not facilitating squat. They're doing absolutely nothing. And what does that mean for your due process rights? Donald Trump talking about every day, sure, I'll look at sending citizens to prisons abroad. I forgot that part in the Constitution. Oh, wait, it's not there. Tim from Eau Claire, very briefly, sir, your thoughts this afternoon.
Well, you're talking about lying. I think I just read online that Pete Hegseth said that China could destroy our entire carrier fleet and our Navy with their hypersonic missiles. Now, is he lying? Or did he just stupidly divulge some sensitive information? Or is he just trying to gin up money, you know, to get more money for the military?
All good questions, Tim. I know nothing about that particular subject. But, Tim, here's my promise to you. I'm going to go look it up before tomorrow. I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to try to get informed about that. And we can talk about that more tomorrow. Tim, I thank you for the question. Jacob Cal, if you could get Tim's question written down specifically, what exactly it was that he thought he heard, I will do a little fact check and we'll come back and talk about that tomorrow. When we talk about individual rights, my next guest is a champion for individual rights. We are all safer. We are all better off because of my next guest's work. Her name is Tanya Atkinson. You know her as the executive director of the Planned, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin Action Fund. Did I get that all out in like one fell swoop? Tanya, thank you so much for being here with us. These issues of individual rights, it sure seems to be situationally dependent, and by situationally dependent, it sure seems to depend on who the individual is before we decide that we get the same rights, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, the topic you were talking about before and now, you know, these really, it's really about fundamental human rights, and who has control over, you know, people's bodies, and that means a lot of different things. Depending on the situation, and that is real, and that is what is happening.
Yeah, Tanya, I'm always, my brain naturally looks to connect things that happen in the news on a daily basis with other issues that don't get to, you know, that'll sort of be top of mind and then fall out of the headlines. And to me, when I talk to somebody about due process rights, I am talking about bodily autonomy, right? That due process means you don't get to seize my body and stick me in a prison cell without giving me the right to be heard, to challenge the evidence, to challenge the state, to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's not lost on me that when we turn to reproductive freedom, and I'm just going to say healthcare freedoms writ large, what we have yet again is essentially the same group of people, the same party leaders, saying to another, to women, you don't get to decide. I get to decide what's going to happen with your body. And we don't even get the benefit of a hearing. They just get to enact very vague laws that prevent our physicians from having candid conversations about what is best for our health and thereby depriving us of bodily autonomy. I mean, I cannot help but to see these of a whole. It's the same groups of people, overwhelmingly white, rich, and male, who seem to be okay with depriving all sorts of other people, including women and brown and black folks, of basic rights that are essential to human dignity.
Right. Well, yes. And Maggie, thank you for the introduction, which was very kind. And your question, you know, this last question is one thing I'd like to touch on with regard to the people of Wisconsin, right? So it is, you know, I'm from Wisconsin. You probably tell by the accent that I'm from here. I go here. And, you know, in these last few statewide elections, the people of Wisconsin have connected those dots. They understand that what is impacting one, you know, issue or one group of people, right, that there's something coming next. So if we look at the turnout in the last statewide election, in the last few statewide elections, if we look at the turnout in the Supreme Court race, yes, in the last number of statewide elections, abortion certainly was one of the most, if not the most salient issue for voters. And it's clear that the people of Wisconsin have not only like said what their values are, but they've said, like, we see what you are doing. We want people in offices that reflect our values. And we know that it's not going to stop at one human right. That, you know, when the Supreme Court, you know, ruled the Dobbs decision and overturned Roe, and immediately healthcare providers, including Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, had to suspend abortion care until the 1849 law was clarified, the people of Wisconsin saw quickly and directly the impact of taking away some of these fundamental human rights and dignity and ability to make your own healthcare decisions. So yes, it is the same people in power that are, you know, sort of going after, if you will, many vulnerable groups. And I've witnessed the people of Wisconsin say, we see you.
Yes, and this is the piece, Tanya, that gives me so much hope. And folks, if you're just joining us, we got Tanya Atkinson. She's the president of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Here's the thing that gives me hope. When we strip away the baloney and regular people, the folks I see in my grocery store, in my place of worship, in my workplace, on the road, standing in line at the bank, when people actually know the truth of the matter, they hear the stories of women that die from sepsis or lose their ability to ever have kids again because Republicans have effectively gagged their doctors and they can't even counsel them completely in a fulsome way about their healthcare choices. When they hear those stories, when the truth about Mr. Garcia is presented to them, that no court ever fully adjudicated through the testing of evidence that this man was a gang member, when that is clearly shown to be a lie, a grievous distortion, what people then can see is the humanity of the person and the cruelty, the harm that is being caused actively and intentionally. And I, for not one second, will ever believe that my fellow Wisconsinites, born and raised here, of here, by here, for here, would ever stand up and say, we want to be cruel to people and place their lives at issue by depriving them of rights. So when we can get past the political rhetoric about these topics, Tanya, I'm given a lot of hope because I'm seeing what you're seeing. And that's that Wisconsinites, when they are given the truth, see it clearly and reject cruelty for the sake of cruelty or cruelty that is metastasized and catalyzed by the deprivation of most basic human rights. I have every reason to be hopeful. A 10% margin in our last Supreme Court race. Tell us, Tanya, how you all at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin are feeling about women's rights and the upcoming state Supreme Court decision that will in part decide some of these questions in the very near term here.
Yeah, there is a lot. You know, Planned Parenthood Advocates is ready for moving forward on the next chapter of protecting and expanding reproductive freedom. When Planned Parenthood Wisconsin was forced to suspend abortion services, the commitment that PPWI made to the people of Wisconsin is that we would restore access to abortion as soon as we could and protect and expand access to the full range of reproductive health care across the entire state. And there is two really important cases that are, in front of the current Supreme Court, and they will have a lot of impact on Wisconsinites' ability to access reproductive health care.
Tanya, if you can hang out for one more segment, I want to tell people about each of those cases, what's different about them, and what impact the decisions in those cases could have on your family's individual rights and your ability to plan your family in the way that works for you. I've got Tanya Atkinson, president of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, with me. You're not going to want to miss our last segment of the...
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The hearing that was happening before the federal judge that is handling Mr. Garcia's case concluded. I haven't been able to review the transcript or any of the reporting yet. All I've seen is a chyron that basically says federal judge takes Trump administration to task. Another one, judge slams Trump administration in hearing over Garcia case. Folks, we're headed towards deposition and contempt rulings. I'm telling you now, it ain't going to get any better. It's going to get worse first. When we talk about fundamental rights, my guest this half hour is an expert. Her name is Tanya Atkinson. She is the president of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Tanya, we got a great, one of our very loyal listeners and callers on the line. I wondered if we could let Anne ask you or me a question or give her comment this afternoon before we dig into the two cases currently pending before the Wisconsin Supreme Court deciding women's reproductive freedoms. Anne from Chippewa Falls, you're next. Say hello to Tanya. And what's your question or comment this afternoon?
Hello, Tanya. I have a couple comments and maybe you can answer these for me. Well, first of all, Pam Bondi, whose country is she talking about? Because this sure the heck isn't mine. It's Project 2025. But what do these multimillionaires and billionaires think our country will look like when they do all this damage? What's our country actually going to look like? How does America look great and healthy again? Has anyone thought about this? What are Republicans voting for? If they're not voting for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, clean energy, healthy schools, clean water, what are they voting for? I'm just at a crossroads here, not knowing what's going on in our country. But thank you for your time.
And thanks so much. Here is a somewhat cynical response. What they're voting for is tax cuts for billionaires. And to enact tax cuts for billionaires, you can't run on that. See, if that was the actual campaign slogan, probably wouldn't go so well. You wouldn't get a lot of votes for that. So you have to create an enemy. And the best kind of enemy is both the enemy that is external, but also the enemy from within, someone that you can blame. And when people feel real existential economic angst, that they're not doing better, that the game is rigged, and somebody says, blame all these people like women and immigrants and black and brown folks, your brain will sometimes want to accept that because it's the easiest of off-ramps to all of the anxiety and existential fear that you've got. But it's still a con. And how many rights of yours or women that you love or the person that you work with, are you willing to trade away for some psychological safety that is nothing more but smokescreen and illusion? Tanya, great question from Anne and the big picture stuff, right? What the heck is going on? But let's drill down to some of the details. We've got two cases before the Wisconsin Supreme Court that will impact women's reproductive choice as well as healthcare choice more broadly, ultimately. Tell us about the two cases and what's different about each of them.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So, there's two cases. So when the Dobbs decision came out and Roe fell, Wisconsin has a law on its books, 1849 law, that was very unclear and very punitive for physicians who provide abortion care. And so that it was, you know, fines, felony charges, prison, imprisonment. You know, it was really serious consequences. Most abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood Wisconsin, suspended services. And the attorney general filed a lawsuit saying that law does not apply for a lot of different reasons. The original decision in the Dane County Court, the judge said the law does not apply to voluntary abortion. And now it's Planned Parenthood Wisconsin resumed providing abortion services once the clarification came through. And then the Supreme Court, now it's moved its way up to the Supreme Court. The oral arguments were held in November, and it doesn't have a decision, but the decision is expected this term. Then Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin filed an original action, which is filing straight to the Supreme Court and accepted by the Supreme Court for this term, saying that, you know, the question is, does the Wisconsin Constitution protect our fundamental right to bodily autonomy and agency, able to make our own healthcare decisions, including accessing an abortion and providing an abortion? And certainly Planned Parenthood Wisconsin thinks the answer to that question is yes. Oral arguments have not been scheduled yet for that case. So that's sort of the distinction between the two. And they're both waiting at, you know, sort of for the Supreme Court next steps.
Yeah, the major distinction there is, does the 1849 law actually prohibit voluntary abortion, or is it an infanticide statute that basically permits criminal penalties if someone was to physically assault a woman and therefore cause her to lose her fetus? That's the question really in that case, along with some others. But it's, does the 1849 law ban abortion or doesn't it? And then Secondly, and related, does our state constitution grant more rights, a greater bundle of personal privacy and autonomy and bodily autonomy rights than the Supreme Court has found in our federal constitution? This, ladies and gentlemen, is why Brad Schimmel was falling all over himself to assure all of his conservative donors that 1849 law is just fine, nothing wrong there. And of course, he doesn't find any right to bodily autonomy in our state constitution. Tanya, when they finally schedule those oral arguments, I'd love to have you back to hear more about them.
I would love to come back and have a conversation, Maggie, as always.
So good to see you, folks. That's Tanya Atkinson, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin president, my friend and now yours. I'm Maggie Dawn. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for due process and reproductive freedom.
The national news cycle never stops.
but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.